So just quickly,
yeah.
Do you ever come across those videos of people just folding origami or
no.
paper or plane or something like that?
No.
I don't know why Instagram thinks I like that stuff. The second that I see, the second that I see, it's like a half folded piece of paper with some hands and a camera facing downward, I flip up immediately. It's okay. Like, I don't want you thinking I'm going to watch any of this Instagram.
Right.
Any of it.
But you're still getting it?
I'm still getting them. Like every, I don't know, every 10th video is like, I'm going to origami a Star Wars battle cruiser.
So yeah, so this is the measure of an episode where it is our continuing mission to explore what makes Star Trek proper Star Trek. And I don't know, unless you've got something, it's just kind of a beautiful send-up of what Star Trek is.
What Lower Decks is, which yeah, is a that, reference yeah, show.
That's true. That is fair. Which, I've got a question for you about that. So I've been Jonathan.
You've been Jonathan?
I am Jonathan.
All 15 seconds?
Well, yeah. I have been, am, and will be. For this episode, I will be Jonathan.
And the criteria by which we judge these episodes, number one, is there science fiction inherent to the plot? Number two, is that science fiction unique or novel in some way? And number four, is there a moral or ethical dilemma? I've been Paul.
And I have been and always will be Jonathan. And this week we watched season 4, episode 3, In the Cradle of Vexilon.
And so when I did the Siri generated or thing,
yeah.
It came up as In the Cradle of Exxon.
Oh, nice. All right. And
Exxon
which,
with two X's.
Right? I kind of figured. So to which the blurb is stated as?
Bill leads his first away mission on an alien megastructure. Not too many weird words in that one, so it's not as entertaining.
Not at all, but I just... I mean, again, like it's kind of the same thing where if you're watching the show and you know the characters, then of course you're going to know who Bill is. But I just like that it's Bill.
It's Bill. It should be a new name every time, by the way. It should be Lower Deck should become an anthology of different named people. Different people.
I think an anthology Star Trek show would be pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I feel like that's what the temporal one would be.
Oh, you're right. But we need the ship. You know what I mean? I don't want it to turn into a character thing where we follow one character and see their arc throughout the whole episode. I don't want time wasted on that. So when you have established characters doing stuff, you don't have to waste time on introducing them every single goddamn time.
Right.
So,
that's fair.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't like character stuff. No more character stuff on television.
Just at all, ever. Who cares about Breaking Bad?
Okay. So this whole episode was a very interesting one to me.
Okay.
Let me tell you why.
Yes, please.
Because I felt like the plot line, not that interesting. I felt like, I think there were three. There was there was Bill.
Yep.
Who was having a crisis of leadership.
Well, he was leading his first away mission, yeah, on an alien megastructure.
Right, yep. as it was said.
Yeah.
We have the captain who was being a tech person for the 7-million-year-old computer, which was weird.
Yeah, go ahead.
It felt like she was overcoming some sort of challenge for herself, that she felt like she was not, she had abandoned her roots as a tech person and this captain stuff was getting in the way. Kind of like in Independence Day, where President Bill Pullman, we learn, becomes a fighter pilot or was a fighter pilot at a certain point. And he was happy to get back to his roots by the third act of the movie. Anyway, my point being is that it felt very out of place.
It felt very Janeway to me. Or very, actually, I didn't realize it until just now, very Barbie, where she's like, oh, I used to have this job. And like just suddenly started doing
it. Right. Yeah, it felt like it should have been another character, but they needed to have that actor in a certain number of episodes, and so they made it her for some reason. I don't know. It felt like we were missing a piece of why she was there.
Right.
And I know you're going to say that they kind of handled that. When somebody says to her, maybe we should get an engineer here who knows what they're doing, and she's like, no, I took a class in college, undergrad.
Oh, I feel like that was the most dismissive way of handling it. Like, that she might have well said, like, I just finished studying, you know, or like, I've always wanted to try this. Like,
yeah,
how hard
I just saw
can it
a YouTube
be?
Video on this exact thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it just felt, because it yes, you could argue that her inexpertise caused the problem, but I don't think it did. I felt like she kind of did everything right, but it failed anyway. And then she kind of saves the day. Like, no one comes and saves the day in terms of someone who, like, she beams down the whoever owns the ferret, the guy with the mustache. Mm-hmm. It would have been kind of an interesting bridge between Boimler and the captain in that they're both learning how to delegate.
Right.
Because delegation is key to leadership.
Yeah.
You can't just do it yourself, but it just came out of nowhere, both of them, but they didn't do that. That wasn't the lesson of the captain's dilemma.
No.
So,
but that is a really nice parallel that would have tied up everything nicely, and it's right. A shame that they didn't do that.
They did not do that. And then the third plot line was Mariner and them being given, they had been hazed. Ultimately, we learned they've been hazed. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing where it just became, like, the amount of references flying by my head, I couldn't keep track of them. But it was very funny.
Well, yeah. So my question is the face in the metal alloy. Like, do you know what that's referencing? I do
not.
No,
it must have been a reference, though. They spent way too much time with it.
Yeah.
You know. But we did definitely reference or catch the reference.
Of course.
Of whatever thing that was from DS9.
Uh-huh.
Because, first of all, you have made many references to the song that they used when he goes into whatever apparatus that.
Well, I love that she was like, Alan Murray, lemon meringue.
Yeah.
So good.
And here's the thing. Here's the most interesting part that I was going to get to about this. This is what I was kind of laying out the plot. It's like, not that interesting. It's like, yeah, they're being hazed. Like, there wasn't a lot of necessarily Star Trek. It was a little Star Trek decal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Except the whole plot line of the ring and the million-year-old civilization is super interesting to me. I'm kind of bummed out that they used this on Lower Decks and not Picard or something like that, where they come across this ancient civilization computer, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and it's this spinning thing. It's like a utopia. Everybody who lives there is like, why is this not being battled over?
Right.
You know, or why aren't they trying to duplicate this? Why isn't the universe littered with these things? And then they could say, well, we don't know how it works. What do you mean you don't know how it works? It's right here. It's a computer. It's like, well, we've studied it. We don't know what the secret sauce is to how it's able to continue to balance all of these different values. Like, you know, it's like, it's interesting. You can, the rabbit hole digs itself, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of bummed out because every time they started just scratching the surface of what's happening with the computer and what their lives are like. And it just, it's very ephemeral, but I loved it. Like, I was riveted, even with all of the kind of, not so interesting plot lines that was zooming past. I wanted to know so much more about that.
Right.
You know, in terms of criteria number one, I think that's a good check. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say more so than any other Lower Decks episode. It was just, I don't know, I was fascinated. Weren't you?
Well, I thought it was referenced to another episode, and I was shocked to learn that it was not. Like, I feel like I've seen that structure before, and yeah, I have.
I'll tell you where you've seen it from.
Okay, yeah, because I think I just figured it out. Where did I see it?
Halo.
Oh, no. No,
that, it was fascinating to me then.
Right, that's not where I remember it, though. It's from Treasure Planet.
Oh,
not nearly as cool nerdy as you were just referencing. Like, everybody loves Halo. Everybody's played Halo. I have not. But, you know, talk to people about Treasure Planet and Disney. Sure. We're here for hours.
It has its own subset niche following, a very high, because it was very contentious or something like that. Didn't it, like, bankrupt Disney or something like that?
Treasure Planet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I getting that wrong?
No, it was, I mean, it didn't bankrupt Disney, but it was...
Or the animation, Disney animation, I mean, yeah.
But yeah, it was one of the biggest disappointments. Kind of sad because Bill Keenan, I want to say, like, he's the artist of The Family Circus.
But anyway, I just found it fascinating. I wanted to know more, but I understand that's not the mission of the show. It's to be funny. Was it particularly funny to you?
I was smiling through the whole thing. I enjoyed it. Nothing really made me laugh out loud. The part that frustrated me was the end, with the hazing, which I'll talk about. But the other thing that I was talking about with it being a send up was I kind of liked, I'm not sure that the sci-fi, like, yes, I think it checks off criteria two, but I'm not sure that it checks off the first one just because they did nothing with the technology. Like, it was all magic. Even with waking up Boimler, where the doctor was like, holy shit, that worked.
I know, that was funny.
Well, and then he like passes out again, and she's like, all right, everybody out. Give me 30 cc's of whatever it was that woke him up.
Whatever worked last time. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I probably laughed. That's probably the funniest part of the whole episode to me.
Yeah. Like, but, just the fact that like they kind of did a wink at Star Trek where they're like, we just use technobabble here anyway, so we're just going to like not even bother with the technobabble. We're just going to say whatever you used last time.
But in terms of what you said about the science fiction and is it novel, I think that it is an amalgam of a lot of different – it is actually ultimately a reference because it's an amalgam of a lot of different plot lines. Like, there's the computer plot line from the original series, which an episode which I think we've seen. And there's also a next-gen episode where they encounter a computer that we've also seen, mm-hmm. where it's they don't know how to fix it. And, it's the kid one. It's mm-hmm. when the bow breaks.
Yeah.
That one has a computer that's old and ancient, and it's a utopian society, but they just can't have kids anymore.
Right.
And their computer is emanating radiation or something like that, whatever. But it's not a new concept, I guess. But I liked the mixture, right? I liked the batter that came out. I liked the brownies mm-hmm, that they made, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Took me a second.
Right? Yeah, but, I mean, yeah. I guess that is something. Like, if you're taking pieces that all are familiar, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. So, all right.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting thing is that this show, I don't know if it's trying to create new and interesting science fiction story, right?
So yeah, I would completely agree not.
In terms of what Lower Decks is and what it sets out to be, I think it did a pretty good job of referencing Star Trek, which mm-hmm. is kind of its thing.
Right.
Using it to forward a plot line. And I think they successfully did that. So.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yes, this is a love letter to Star Trek, and this is a fun show to watch, and this was a good episode. But I think, you know, just recognizing our criteria, you know, we just have to hit whether or not, because we've had episodes of Lower Decks that have been a very solid, you know, proper Star Trek episode.
Yeah, yeah. And you could say that The Ring is fairly novel. They haven't encountered a ring like that. And I think that the only thing that we've really come close to is the Dyson Sphere in Next Gen.
Right, yep, I was going to say that.
But at least in terms of the episodes that we've seen at this point. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see more of it, which I know I'm never going to get, but that's what I was thinking.
No, it's very much like the Dyson Sphere. Yeah, they solved it. They're on their way. Like, this is never coming up again. Yeah.
Never coming up again, unfortunately.
Which is kind of interesting, again, because this was not something that was very uniquely animated. You know, like, this is very much something that any other show could do. You would just have the establishing shot outside of it where there's this huge ring. And then you beam down to the planet and everybody looked humanoid. This is something that they could do on any other series, this ring, because of how long it's been around. Like, they could even establish that Strange New Worlds could go visit it.
Yeah. I mean, millions of years. I mean, I just don't know. It's one of those things that is so awesome that why isn't, like I said before, mm-hmm. why have we not seen this before?
Right.
You know, in terms of there being more of these things, I don't know. It's could have been cool.
And it's been established now, so maybe it will be cool later. Not necessarily in Lower Decks, but just somewhere that it is brought up again, but probably not. There's a lot of one-off aliens.
Right. It's too bad. Yeah. I like the big eyebrows, though. I like that was sort of the defining feature of their faces.
Right. Yeah. Well, and again, same thing. Like, I love that in this animated series where they can make them look however they want, they're just adding really big eyebrows. Like,
yeah, I guess the need or the want to make interesting aliens is not as important as all the other stuff. In mm-hmm. this new Trek.
Yeah.
But, so another thing occurred to me. Mm-hmm. So we've had some Instagram comments. So the video that they were referencing was that it must be very difficult to staff a show like Lower Decks, where you need to have some established comedy writer who has been around the block a couple times and knows what to do, and also is a Star Trek fan.
Right.
And the comment was, well, they can't just watch reruns. You know, there's reruns you can watch, and then you can all of a sudden have all the information you need, which is akin to what I said earlier, which was handing you an encyclopedia saying, here's all the information, make some jokes.
Exactly.
And this episode totally reinforces my point, which is just because even if you were to watch all of the episodes, which is 700 plus episodes, which is a huge task, it would take you weeks of just watching episodes. So in terms of having somebody knowing nothing or very little about Star Trek and having them on as a writer and being like, hey, you should write this Star Trek show, something that is very niche and very specific and whose fans like it because of its specificity in terms of the canon, right? That's why everybody gets all butthurt when somebody changes something. So this idea that even if you were to watch all of those things does not make you a Star Trek fan.
Right.
Nor could you even possibly remember all of the details. And this is a great episode that underlines that point because they had so many random references that were not overt references. It wasn't like, oh, he's got a tricorder.
Right.
I saw that in one of the episodes that I watched.
Right. They're going to use a photon torpedo.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Right.
Lieutenant Kirk did that in all the movies. No, these were super subtle. Like the idea of the seven million year old computer. That was, like we said, it was a very subtle amalgam of references of all of the different stuff spanning decades. So this idea that, oh, somebody just sort of put all that together having been a non-fan who just watched the shows, no way.
Right.
And the super weird one with the DS9, Alan Murray, blah, 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 you know, there's no way, right?
Well, yeah, like it's one of those things where if you just were watching reruns and you were in your own little bubble, and because the other thing to speak to that is if you were told that you need to know Star Trek and they gave you an encyclopedia, like the amount of overtime that you would have to put in of just watching everything and getting like submerged in the culture to recognize what people talk about and what they don't.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What do people like the memes?
Yeah.
All the memes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so like you would have to watch that episode. Would come away home, far from home. Like
far from home. That's it. The voyage far from home.
Right. Far from home, coming away. But what was I saying? To like recognize that episode is like kind of, it's not even a guilty pleasure. Like people just enjoy hating on it. And then to have Rutherford like fly through all of the levels and disappoint the players that are in there.
Right. And they like nailed every single one of them, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's not somebody.
He's like, release the gas. Come on.
Yeah, that's not just somebody reading a synopsis.
Right.
You know, that is somebody who's a fan
putting
it in there. And again, I don't think you could have different people be the reference people who are the comedy writers. It just wouldn't work. I mean, although in this episode, it kind of was that. It was kind of like, here are the references, and the plot line is kind of superimposed on top of it a little bit. So maybe there are people who are specifically for, here is the relevant reference. Here's the things that people like and that have kind of made it through the decades and seem to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe it is a writer's room where they have Star Trek fans and comedy writers, and the Star Trek fans are talking about things, and then the comedy writers are like, well, what if this happened? Would that be funny?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they might be separate, but you can't do a room with one or the other.
Can you imagine the Star Trek neckbeards? They're like, just like, no, that wouldn't be funny.
Right.
It's disrespectful. You will apologize to me immediately. It's kind of, what's the guy from The Office? The guy that's like super into Battlestar Galactica?
Dwight.
That guy.
Yeah. You know,
Dwight, yeah.
Yeah.
A bunch of Dwights.
Well, and did you catch, like, I love that they didn't do anything with it, but just the faceplate, you know, he was like, wait, my whole life was a simulation. I miss my wife.
Which I didn't understand that whole artifact.
Oh, it was the great, it was the Picard episode where like the thing beams into his brain and he's sitting on the bridge and like everybody's trying to figure out what his problem is, but he's living his life on, like in his mind of this other culture. And
like the inner light?
Yeah. Yes. That one. I feel with terrible that, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Picard?
Yeah.
I mean, the most famous Next Gen episode ever, that one?
Well, and I was trying, like, I was like, it's like The Inner Light, but it's not that episode. And then, like, as I'm talking through it, and I was going to say, and, like, he keeps playing the flute and, like, getting better at it, like, in The Inner Light, because that's the episode I'm talking about.
Not the one with Picard where he plays the flute and keeps getting better at it. Not that one.
Right. No, I was remembering the culture. I forgot about the penny whistle until, like, I was talking about him getting older and they were showing that by him playing the penny whistle and getting better at it.
And I'm like, The Inner Light? You're like, no, that's not it. What is that? Right. What is that one?
No, it's on the tip of my tongue. Like, Lessons was kind of a spiritual sequel to it. Like,
Right. It wasn't outer. It wasn't like an outer plot line. It was more like inside of his mind.
That spark that
it was like there's like a beacon of his life that of like a bright beacon of his inner self.
It's called something like Inside Spark.
But I didn't understand. Was that an Inner Light reference?
I assumed it was, just based on his, like, I miss my wife. Like, that's...
Can you imagine, just to go off on a little rant here, can you imagine the psychotic break Picard would have upon waking up after having lived his whole life? And then waking up, he's like, oh, yeah, you're still 30, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. he missed, like, everything was a lie, never existed. Can you imagine? Like, he would be just destroyed psychologically.
I don't know, because I've thought about that too, but, like, you can have really vivid dreams, and then when you wake up, you're like, yeah, I still remember, but I recognize that it was just a dream. So, like...
Yeah, like 50 or 60 years, though, of just a day after day after day. And you could argue that the technology stopped him from doing that somehow, or, like, it was able to make it so he didn't just break down into his brain wasn't mush when he wakes up.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, again, kind of the same thing. Like, you can have time pass in your dream at a fairly faster clip, you know, and then just recognize that even though there were days or weeks in your dream, like, you were only asleep for 8 hours.
That's true. I have had dreams that are very vivid and where it seems like a lot of time is passing. I've never had one, though, where, first of all, that was linear. Second of all, that was 50 years.
right.
It would be interesting in The Inner Light, though, to handle that problem if they decided, that if the writer so decided, that he woke up and didn't remember anything, which I know would be counter to the whole purpose of the machine
right.
that kidnaps him, but that he can play the flute that he couldn't play before.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of a vestige of his experience. But I like how I just rewrote The Inner Light to make it shittier.
Right. Well, yeah, like, it's one of those things where we talk about, like, they shouldn't do that. Right. Like, you know what they should have done? They should have had him remember those things. And then when he sees the penny whistle. But they didn't do that.
They didn't do that, thank God. But that room. How about that room? You know, mm-hmm. there's another thing. Like, oh, they have this artifact/reference room
right.
that they can go into. I want to know more about that. I'm glad that they didn't just run it, like, go across, kind of like they have in a couple of the superhero movies where it's just a wall of framed references that they just walk past in order to get the reference quota. You uh-huh. know?
So I just looked it up and it's a Betazoid gift box.
It's not The Inner Light then. You were right. Yeah. So I did wish. Here's one thing that I wish happened.
Yeah.
And I feel like this would have made it more interesting and a little bit more science fiction-y.
Okay.
Is that the ring is spinning and it's spinning to create gravity.
Gravity, right.
I'm mm-hmm. assuming, mm-hmm. right?
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So I wouldn't have been funny that when the computer breaks down and starts malfunctioning, that it doesn't stop spinning. That would just murder everybody and turn everybody into jelly. But it slows down.
Right.
And so they're constantly having to work against gravity. So imagine, instead of it being a volcano thing, that it's just the Boimler's having to carry those, whatever those things back and forth
mm-hmm.
against gravity. Like, it keeps kind of wobbling and moving.
Right.
And everybody kind of has to deal with that problem of gravity being unpredictable. That would have been fun for me instead of the volcanoes erupting and, you know, all that stuff. Like, that felt like would have been a more interesting concept.
yes. to follow.
And it would have been funny because, you know, you just have people painting and it's just going.
Right.
It would have been a nice little well of gags that you could have done. That is gravity gags.
Right. Rather than just having the computer create volcanoes. Yeah.
Create volcanoes. Yeah. And it would have been easier to animate. Yeah. Less stuff flying through the air, things like that. Where were my super Star Trek nerds in the writer room then? They should have come up with that.
But that's
that
not,
should have been a thing.
Right, but that's not really a Star Trek thing. That's a comedy thing. That's the comedy writer's fault.
That's true. You're right. But see, there you go. It's like you need somebody to bridge that gap of, I am a science fiction fan and I also write comedy. Here's something where we can do those two things together, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You just can't, when there's that disconnect of content versus comedy, it just wouldn't be as good. And I think they must not be doing that, at least not entirely. I'm sure they have fact checkers and all that stuff for Star Trek, but they must all be fans to some degree, right?
Well, yeah, I don't think that there's anybody in there who is a comedy writer and is kind of like, take it or leave it on Star Trek. Like, then you are in
Can't be.
Right. You definitely have the wrong job right now.
Except all the executive producers who are in charge of all the new Trek.
Yeah, but, you know, they're always living in a bubble and have no idea like what the fans want, and they just have knee-jerk reactions, which is why Morbius was re-released in theaters.
I didn't see that.
Oh, no. Oh.
Don't even know what it is.
Yeah, you need to look up the story of Morbius and the fact that, like, just its whole release timeline. It's a beautiful disaster. It's amazing that it even happened. So I do want to talk about the hazing. Like, I'm so irritated that they went to the trope of hazing. They knew they were being hazed. Then they thought they weren't being hazed because of the story. And so Tendi went in and found all of them. And it was the last one she clicked on. And it turned out to be an actual problem. And then they go into the bar. And the guy's like, yeah, you know, I was hazing him the whole time. I wish that they either had found the chip earlier, he was being genuine and it wasn't hazing, or that there was no chip.
Or that there was some sort of consequence for the hazing that, oh, they did actually find something. No, that was supposed to be a haze. What are you talking about? No, we found this and it could have been terrible, or there was some sort of crisis.
Right.
It was funny, though, when the guy who made them do all this stuff gave them the sob story. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, no, please tell me about this terrible jazz thing. And she turns around and is like, go fix it. That's funny. I love the angry.
Yeah.
It was just funny. I laughed at that part too.
What was it? It was Terrellian flop jazz? Telluride. Yeah, Telluride slop jazz. That's what it was.
Yeah, that could have been a whole episode. That whole thing. Like exploring the whole isolinear chips, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm wanting it to be something that it's not. I understand, but
right. Well, yeah,
that had enough juice as a plot line that it could have gone a lot of places in terms of them exploring the ship and how the ship works and mm-hmm. those isolinear chips and what the fuck they do.
Right.
It's never quite clear exactly what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and there were so many in there. But one of the things that we really appreciate about Star Trek is the fact that it does subvert tropes, either in a in a very clever way or in a subversive way.
That's true.
You know, and this time around they just didn't, and it wasn't even for the jokes. It, like, I mean, maybe it was for that one joke. Yeah, we were hazing him the whole time, but that's so worn out that it was just I was really disappointed by the button on that storyline.
Yeah, it's also really mean, right? I mean, I guess they were going to be mean too, right? But everybody's being
way
mean,
more still, so.
Yeah, and also you took three officers who you've just promoted and wasted their time for how long?
Mm-hmm.
You could have been using them for things that are actually need to get done. Get done. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So it felt like, you being a good commander, Ransom, or whoever the other person was, you know, it's like, I don't know.
Right.
Not great.
Right. I mean, it was also kind of downtime, you know. It might have been, well, and that would have been another part too. That would have been great. Like if an emergency, they did the hazing in another episode, and they're trying to decide whether or not they're being hazed. And like maybe they stack hazing on hazing, saying, you know, guys, never mind. Like this is, like maybe they call Wolf too many times. You know, they're like, This was a hazing. It was supposed to be super obnoxious, take a long time, but we have to call you off of it because we actually do have this emergency, you know. And then he brings him out to something else. And then the same thing, you know, he's like, all right, this really is hazing. It's not an emergency, but we do have something else that came up and this is an emergency.
That's funny. Yeah, it would have been good. Or they don't believe it, that it's not a haze. Like the real emergency is not part of the haze, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, no, no. The ship is going to crash in like 15 seconds. We have to do something. It's like, yeah, right. We've been through this before. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to the holodeck.
Right, right.
So, yeah. They could have done something. I would have been more fun, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it needed more time. And there were three plot lines in parallel happening.
Right, right. Which is interesting for a 30-minute show that, like, I mean, it also kind of speaks to how thin the plots are, which, again, is fine because we're here for the jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that they had to fill in three separate timelines to fill in a 30-minute show.
Yeah, it's too bad they did that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just don't have enough time to write. That's very possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I guess, theoretically, a proper Star Trek episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, given it, I was saying no, just because they did so much of just magic-y stuff with it, but the setting itself was a unique and novel place, and the setting was what moved Mariner's plot forward, and so you really couldn't have done her plot without the setting. And one of the things that is starting to grate on me, but it does really help solidify the third one, is that they have that, like, the full house, very special conversation, you know, at the end, like, where, you know, the episode with Boimler and Mariner, where he's like, I don't know, I just, the last time we got separated, you know, like...
Boimler and the Vulcan, you mean?
No, no, no. The previous episode where Mariner was stuck with the Voyager episode where Mariner was stuck against the wall with like the virus slime. And he's like pouring his heart out and explaining what his dilemma was. And now here again, we are like with Boimler pouring his heart out to the Vulcan.
Yeah. I mean, he did go into something that was very specific and it wasn't sort of, as you said, full house kind of, we get it. Mm-hmm. We know, we understand. We all knew why he was doing what he was doing.
Right.
Right. I think that's the grating part is we've seen this dilemma before, right?
Yeah.
We've seen this problem of I can't let control go. I can't
let go of control.
Well, what's the word?
Delegate?
Relinquish.
Oh.
You can't relinquish control of the situation because of whatever the problem. Is there a more creative way to give him a leadership demon?
Well, and the other part of it too is I don't feel like we need to be slapped in the face with the dilemma that he's facing. Like, have someone else address it without talking about it. You know, like Mariner could have just said, like, hey, what's your deal? Like, you're really off today. Like, you just know that, like, no matter what happens, you and I are going to be friends, you know, and like resolve the dilemma without telling what the dilemma is. Same thing here. Like, Talon or whatever her name is could have just said, like, you need to trust your team because you have worked with them before when you were not their leader. And now that you are their leader, you need to show them that they can trust you. You know, that kind of thing. Like, don't have him throw up his dilemma to have somebody else be like, get over it.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way to do that.
Yeah, hopefully they find it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a maybe for me. I'm just like an eh.
I mean, it's a yes, just in like objective alone, you know, where we are not like, yeah, this was a solid Star Trek episode. We're like, yeah, it takes the boxes.
It's like mathematically, yes, mm-hmm. but doesn't give me the feelies.
Right.
You know, yep. Except for the ring. I want the ring. Yeah. Let me go there.
But it was a good episode. I think we've talked about this before way back in the day, but the ship is either way farther away from the planet than they're calculating, or the planets are much smaller than Earth.
Well, and they can't be that much smaller because there would be no gravity.
Right, right.
No, or not enough gravity. So I think they're just farther away. I think that they want to put the whole planet and the ship in the same shot. And so they just can't. It's impossible to do that without fudging it a little bit.
Exactly.
It's kind of like when we came across the Next Gen episode about the Dyson Sphere.
Right.
You know, the Dyson Sphere is big as it has to be. Like, it's unfathomable
right.
how big it would have to be.
to cover a star.
A star, but far enough away from the star.
Right, that's not burning up. Right, right.
Molten metal on the inside that it would just look like a wall.
Right.
When they were up against it. But they kind of gave it a curve uh-huh. because they wanted to, you know.
Yeah, to show that it was a planet and not just a wall.
Right,
right. Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just even talking about that, like it has to be the diameter of Mercury's orbit.
If not more.
If yeah. not more. Not, yeah. Yeah. In a, which in is a humongous. Sphere.
Yep.
Like the amount of material that's needed to make that.
They say that there wouldn't be, in our solar system, there would not be enough material to
yeah.
create a Dyson sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which gives you a sense of how interesting that plot line was that they just like brushed over
right.
because they wanted to have
Is it a Dyson
Scotty.
Sphere? Right.
Yeah. Is it a Dyson sphere? Yes, it is.
Well,
set a course away from it immediately.
Well, again, I mean, there. Just going back through our episodes, there's that the episode with the people who were cryogenically frozen and they found them in space. And Picard's like, I can't be bothered with that.
Yeah, that is a problem, isn't it? We did kind of unearth a curiosity problem with Picard.
Right? Like, I don't even know what it is because, like, frozen people are definitely archaeology, which is his thing. Like, which would have been the most fascinating thing.
Don't have time for this.
Right. I mean, I get that like Romulans are there and that's a little bit more pressing, but like he shouldn't be super irritated.
No, even before there was a problem, or I don't actually know when the Romulan problem happened in the course of the episode, but when they just happen upon the time capsule thing.
Right.
Even then they're like, oh, Worf is like, there seem to be life signs in there that could be hundreds of years old. He's like, oh, I guess we'll stop. Can we just
Oh, right. Yeah. Wasn't it like they were going to pass by it? They're like, wait a minute, there are life forms. And Picard's like, oh, I don't have time for this. All right, fine. Let's go check it out. and then they're time travelers. And he's like, just one more problem on my list. Like,
I know. I'm so tired of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that might have been the point of the ring in and of itself. Like, here's this amazing bit of technology and whatever. That might have been something that they were paying homage to as well.
Possibly. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Wouldn't I mean, that may be giving the writers more credit, but also at the same time, like, it might not necessarily have been an homage. They might have just remembered that other episodes did that and they thought it would be hilarious. Well, is that an homage if they did the same thing?
Right. Well, if Picard would have found it boring, then everyone else should find it boring too.
Right. That would have been amazing. Like Mariner's having her little crisis and they're talking about how amazing this feat of technology is. You know, and she's like, do you think Picard would care about this? Then why should I?
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
All right. Well, okay. So it's on the books.
Yep.
A genuine Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
All right. What are we watching next week? Is it Lower Decks season 4, episode 4?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're sticking with this pattern, we've for the next 7 weeks, we've got nothing but Lower Decks.
Oh boy. Good.
So this is the measure of an episode, Lower Decks edition. So that was the other thing. So last week's episode, the blurb was Mariner tries to get demoted, Rutherford tries to get promoted, and Boimler makes a big move. There's our three plot lines. This week's right. episode was Boimler leads his first away mission on an alien megastructure, and that's the end of it. And then same thing with next week. Tendi is summoned back to Orion for a wedding. It's something borrowed, right. something green.
That's true. But if you think about it, none of the plot lines, well, the Captain plot line and the Boimler plot line connect, obviously.
Mm.
But the Mariner one does not at all.
Right.
In fact, could have been in any episode. So maybe that's what happened.
Like, but if it wasn't, it's not
part, yeah, they have this little vignette of things that are totally orphaned from any plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Do they even mention anything
nope.
having to do with Boimler and the Captain? Yeah. Yeah,
nothing about the Captain and nothing about Mariner and her crew.
So wait, what's the blurb for the new one?
Tendi is summoned to Orion for a wedding.
Oh, maybe this will be the most interesting one of the whole season. We never know.
So that was off of memory, and the only word that I missed was back. Tendi is summoned back to Orion for a wedding.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, that must be where she's from. That is, makes the whole difference. Now I'm excited.
See, it's important to use every word.
Usually when you're summoned, it's you're summoned for like a death in the family, not for a wedding.
Or it's your wedding, like in the Spock and T'Pring episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. T'Pring. I'm glad that's done.
I mean, it's kind of like Boy Meets World, you know, Topanga.
I've never seen that show, but I know Topanga. I'm sure there's got to be references like that in this show that we just don't know.
Right.
Right? That they bury stuff.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Kind of like when you have a license plate that is an inside joke. Like, what? Why?
I
What's
see
the
you
point?
Ate one, am I?
Yeah, don't get me started.
Okay, well, I've been Jonathan.
And I've been Paul.
And this has been The Measure of an Episode.
But you already knew that.
Is that Dr. Shacks?